Lawrence Prospera is a community-driven, nonprofit organization committed to our mission of strengthening the individuals and families of Lawrence, Massachusetts through the development of thriving neighborhoods. Sisu presents Hola, Honest Opinions with the Lawrence Attitude.
Hello, everyone, and thank you for tuning in. We have a couple of very special guests for you today. CEOs / entrepreneurs Edinson and Yudis of the world-famous Salon 22.
So I know you guys are very busy individuals. So without further ado, let's get into the questions. When did your family migrate to the United States?
Well, our grandparents, grandmothers came here in the 60s. But our family, direct family, came here in 1988 or 87, somewhere into New York. And then they moved to Massachusetts somewhere in 1990. And we came here in 1990 as well, at the end of 1990.
Moved to Lawrence,
okay. Correct.
Now, where's your family from in the Dominican Republic?
From El Cibao. Both of my parents are from El Cibao, La Vega, my mother, and my dad is from San Francisco de Macorís.
Ooh, San Francisco de Macorís. I think I've heard that in a song. I'm not sure. Merengue.
Sí, sí. Eso es Don Miguelo. Don Miguelo siempre lo menciona, yeah. Que él es de ahí, de San Francisco de Macorís también, igual que mi papá, que es nuestro padre.
Very good. Do you guys miss it over there, or you guys have adapted to life here?
I'm the worst person to ask that.
Yeah.
I am all American now. I am Dominican in the food, in the traditions, in the merengue, but I'm more Americanized by now. I mean, I've been here for 30 years, 31 years, and I came here when I was 15 years old. So I lived most of my life here. So I feel like when I'm here, I'm all American. When I go there, I feel all Dominican. So,
what about you, Yuris?
It was tough. When I first came here, you know, I'm older than him, so I had a little more life. I have lived a little more, and it was tough. I miss my friends. I miss everything. The weather. It was very, very. How can I put it? Frustrating. For me to adapt, you know, I went to school, I met friends right away, because I went to Lawrence High, and most of the guys in Lawrence High, we had a good mixture of cultures, but there was a lot of Hispanic people, and you know, again, and my brother Edinson went to the Vogue with my other brother, because they were younger than me, so if I went to the Vogue, I had to lose some of my years, so I had to go to Lawrence High, which I don't regret. It was quite an experience. I met a lot of good people and good teachers, but it was tough. But like he said, I think I'm more Dominican than him.
Really?
that's the reason why.
but you know, then again, you know, like, I mean, I feel Dominican. I like things done a little more structured. I mean, our country, you know, he has to agree with that. The rules are not made to be followed, you know? And I like the rules
to
be followed.
That's interesting.
So
I know you mentioned a little bit about, you know, how hard it was to adapt to the culture here, the change of life, you can say. You know, especially it all depends on what month of the year your family first migrated here, because that also can have a big impact if you come in here in the middle of the winter, you know, from the island. It's a big shock.
How it happened.
Yeah. But can you share with us a little bit about how it was to grow up during that period of time with, you know, such in schools, community, friends, the culture, the language?
Well, I'll start, because like he already started saying that, you know, that I went to the Vogue. In the Vogue, we had less than 100 kids who were bilingual, you know, that we had a very small ESL program, and all the classes I needed to take them in English. So you're coming into a class and you hear you understand one word. I felt like I was an alien. But you know, that helped me to also be able to speak English a lot faster. So in the summer of the same year of 1991, the president Bill Clinton came up with some funds, and they were, instead of sending, you know, kids wanted to go to work and make money in the summer, but they were paying us to take English classes, $133 a week.
Oh wow!
That was like, yes, I'm
in. A great motivation to do so.
So that helped me also, because I took the whole summer program. Then by the time I went back to school, like, I was ahead of most kids who didn't have the opportunity.
So it paid
so
off.
So it allowed me to meet more people. But, yeah, it was tough. Like you said, it wasn't easy leaving the whole family, you know, rest of the family back home and friends. But two years into it, when we started driving and buying cars and so on, we really forgot quick.
In my case, to be honest with you, like, the first 5 years is what took me to get adjusted.
Wow. Yeah.
Because I always wanted to go back. That was in my mind all the time. Mm-hmm. My mom said to us, I pay for the ticket over here. If you want to go back, you got to pay for your own ticket. And I was like, oops, that's not a good.
It's not good.
I don't know when it's going to happen because, you know, I couldn't work. Like, you know, and study at the same time. I got a small part-time job, and it was tough to actually save money, especially when you start driving. Then now you have to pay for insurance. You have to pay for the car getting fixed.
Yes.
And, you know, so saving money and then, you know, buying clothes, because all of our clothes, we were like, whatever we brought here, we have to kind of just get rid of because it wasn't what was hip. You know, you wanted to be hip.
Okay, so that comes,
you know,
to the culture.
So, and this guy.
And in the 90s, it was just
I was always stealing his clothes.
Oh.
Well, you know, I was the first one who started working when we came here. I started working at an appliance repair place. And so I was the one who first started buying clothing. And he was the first one who started school. So I buying clothing, but he started using them to go to his school. But then it worked out because, you know, when we started working, all of us started working, we didn't have, it was like my clothing and his clothing and my brother's clothing, we were able to swap among clothes. So I didn't have 10 pens, I probably had 30, you know, because I was using his or my other brother. So
and you guys went
it worked
to different
out
schools,
well.
So
yes,
that
correct.
Was able to
exactly,
easy,
that worked out.
Because I'm sure it would have picked, you know, kids are like, yeah, you were.
That worked out really
clothes.
Good.
He took a jacket that it took me a whole summer to pay, like a summer, like a winter clothes.
he just paid it. He just has paid it. And
he
brought it
to college with him, and I had to wait until he returned it, because he went to Salem State College. And I had to wait for my jacket until he bring it back to me.
Brand new. I took it from him. I was like, oh, this is a nice jacket. Let me see.
What brand was it? Do you remember?
From Wilson's?
Leather, what was it called?
Wilson Leather. Wilson's Leather from Methuen Mall,
the old Methuen Mall.
That would cost money now. It's like, it's probably an antique now because
I don't even know what happened to that coat. But
and
I paid a lot of money
too.
At that time. A lot of money.
Real stuff.
It took me the whole summer.
Yeah.
To pay for that jacket.
That's, you know,
and
that's
part like, of the summer.
Now, can you just tell us a little bit about the full name of Volk? I know you said the vocational school.
It's Greer Lawrence Technical High School.
Okay,
correct.
Yeah, just clarifying that because they'll probably be like, what's Volk?
Well, if you're not from Merrimack Valley, you probably will be like, what is that Volk?
What is that?
That's how us Regis go by, the Volk.
So tell me about the three most influential people in your life and how they impacted your life. And you guys can, you know, take turns.
Well, I want to tell you is both of my parents, my mom and dad, and my brother yours, are probably the three most influential people in my life for business.
What about you?
Jito, my mom and dad, and this guy here.
I like that. Keep it all in the family.
But it's true because, you know, we complement each other. Like, it's crazy sometimes. We be having conversations with people that we have no idea. We just, you know, we had a conversation with you, and then you go and talk to him.
Mm-hmm.
And you had kind of the same conversation with him, and you'd be surprised, like, oh, your brother just told me this. And you're like, but, you know, we never actually talk. And then, you know, he said it exactly the same way you just said.
Wow.
I'm like, it's crazy sometimes, you know, the way. And I feel that, you know, whatever I'm lacking off, he has, he's and vice versa.
You guys compliment each other.
Yeah, that's how I feel, you know.
So he has the high, I have the low.
So what is the most important lessons you've learned over the years within your personal career, growing up, and within your business?
Well, I tell you that in my case, my dad was very influential in our lives, very strict, very loving person, and he always had the answer. I mean, you know, he influenced a lot in us. And I can see my dad in my brother, and I'm pretty sure he feels the same way. Mm. He looks a lot like my dad more than me, but like, it's just, he was so influential in our lives. The way that we do things, like my brother and I always say, like, he went above and beyond to shape us. Mm-hmm. You know, we grew up in a Christian family. We were 8 brothers and sisters.
Oh, wow.
We were, the 3 little ones. There's one between Edinson and I. And he taught us how to be responsible. Business. My father was a businessman all the time. Even when he was sleeping, he was thinking business. And we just grew up with that, you know. He taught us how to work.
Yeah.
I regret that he taught me how to work, to be honest with you, because he was so smart. He should have just teach me how to make people work for me, or make money work for me, not me work for
yes,
the money.
Yes. Yeah.
So my brother and I are very tired. Like, we work so much that we don't know when we're supposed to be done. Like, you know, we don't have, it's not enough to be quitting. You know what I mean? Like, we work hard, and that pays off. That's what I have learned.
Yeah, I was just going to say, that's a good lesson.
Yeah.
Your father, even though.
But I'm teaching my kids. I'm not teaching that to my kids. I don't want them to work as hard as I do. I want them to think smart, to, you know,
okay,
to educate themselves. And take whatever I'm teaching them, but instead of working for the money, make the money work for them. You know,
that's what I
want them to do, because I see life differently today. If I could go back, I would take all the lessons, but I would use that and be more smart about it.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think I have wasted a lot of time working hard.
Mm-hmm.
When you have so much opportunities of just, you know, taking whatever you have learned and create something with that. And this is where I'm at right now.
Yeah, and finding the opportunities too, you know, because sometimes you...
And this country offers a lot of that. I am very grateful that my parents came over to the United States and gave us that opportunity.
Yes, I agree.
So I have learned that, you know, also the people that you hang out with has a lot to do with who you become.
That's true.
So always stay positive. You know, you could be friends with a lot of people, but or acquaintances, or whatever you want to call it, but your friends should be like a very close circle, because that's the only way you can actually move forward in this world. And the way things are right now, you have to have friends that are influencing you, and that you admire them and they admire you back.
Mm-hmm.
I feel that will make it a lot better for you to start seeing your dreams come true, because you know it's there's a lot of people out there that instead of them feeling good about your success, they actually be hating on you.
The down low too, you know, they're behind you, the haters.
But
they're your
there's
fans
a lot of
sometimes.
Good, you know, you just have to learn how to identify those things.
Yes, quick.
And yeah,
you know?
I'm always studying people. Like, you know, pay attention. They always tell you who they are, but you know, you choose not to see it sometimes,
yeah,
because you know you feel good about hanging out with them and stuff. But the opportunities this country offers you are endless. But it's what you do with them. You know what I mean? Because they could be right in your face all the time, and you keep complaining about stuff. And I hate when people complain. Don't concentrate so much on the problem. You already know what the problem is, so concentrate on the solutions. That's my motto. I go by that. I tell my sons, I have three kids, I love my kids, and I tell my employees that. I mean,
what
you know,
age, if I may ask about you?
Sure. The oldest is 10.
Okay.
His name is London.
Oh, nice.
And then I have Lordano, whose birthday is today. Happy birthday. I love you. It's his birthday today.
Oh, happy birthday.
Lordano. And then my little one is 6. His name is Alem.
Oh, wow. So you have three boys.
Three boys.
Three boys. You've been blessed with three boys.
Very blessed.
Part of you that will continue.
I keep saying that all the time. Like, my brother and I work together, and I keep saying all the time, because that's how I feel now, God is good. I keep saying that all day. It just comes out. I'm driving, and I feel, I breathe. Mm-hmm. I take this deep breath, and I just say, God is so good. I just feel like saying that. And after I started saying stuff like that and thinking, you know.
Say it the way you say it. Oh, Dios mío, tu sierra bueno.
Yeah.
Qué lindo, though. Me gusta.
That's what he says.
I say that all the time.
Yeah. I like that. So, you know, I
don't know if that answers the question.
No, it sure doesn't. It gives me more than I was asking. So please, you know, feel free.
You're gonna have to re-ask the question for me because.
Oh, sure. So, what is the most important lessons you've learned over the years within your personal career or your business?
Okay. Well, you know, my brother, when I became a hairstylist, my brother said, I don't want you to start working in Lawrence, because we wanted to have a chain salon. So he says, I'm going to try to locate you in Andover. So I started working in Andover. And I became a business owner in Andover a year later. A partially owner. Then 2 years after that, I became sole proprietor of a salon. It probably was the first Latino salon in Andover, Massachusetts. Uh-huh. So... prior to my ownership, it used to be La Conquistadora, and she named it that way because she was the first Latino salon in Andover, in a very, you know, for people who know around here, it's one of the wealthiest towns. So it was a big accomplishment. So she said she named La Conquistadora Hair Salon and Nails Bar. So when I bought into it, we changed and we put Salon 22. We want to make it simple because 2 years later, we had people asking us, how do you spell La Conquistadora? So we had to come with a more Americanized. So accomplishing getting a salon in one of the wealthiest and most known city in the area, it was really a big accomplishment. And also realizing that, like Yuris was saying earlier, that anything is possible in America when you put your work into it and your hard work into it. When I see immigrants come to America and not taking opportunities of everything that it has to offer, it gets me mad. It gets me really mad because I said, why do you come to this beautiful country and still want to practice what you did back home?
Thank you. Yes.
You know, you have to change, because there's a reason why we left our country, you know, because we wanted it better.
Try to change it to what United States is.
You know, you can add to it. I felt the day I became a U.S. citizen, I felt like I was a traitor. Until the judge said, you're not forgetting who you are. You're going to add to it.
You're going
to
compliment.
So that's then I said, you know, it's true. I mean, I don't have to forget who I am. I just have to, you know, I became part of America, and I still am where I am. You know, I still eat my Dominican food. I still have the Caribbean blood in me, and I still like to hear, you know, the sounds of the merengue, the
chat.
Nobody can take all that.
Yeah.
But the things we don't do right, I want to change it, and that's how I see it. So it's a big accomplishment to be able to own businesses in America, owning buildings, properties, and becoming us for our own work. Back home, you would always be your dad's son. Back home, it's more... You know, your dad was the one giving you your credit. And here I build my own credit. I bought my own house because of my own effort and work. Sort of. So it wasn't like my dad bought my house and helped me get a loan. So I think that that's been my biggest accomplishment, is being able to know that in America everything is possible. So we owned at one point like 5 salons. We had salons in Lawrence, in Lowell, in Charleston, in Andover.
Maryland.
We had a shop in Maryland. In one of the 3 out of the 5 wealthiest counties in America, I had a shop right there. You know, so everything is, whatever you put in your mind, you can do it. You just got to work for it.
That's true.
And my brother's saying, you know, we worked, but, you know, the opportunity were different. I think our parents gave us the opportunity to be where we are because they did the first stepping stone. You know, they did the first walk. They had to come here. We had to be separated. They gave us the opportunity to come to America. Now we're doing more, and hopefully our kids will be able to, who are now Americans, they can become, you know, the president of the United States,
that's
the governor, the, anything they want, because we have already pavemented the road. Now they just got to drive it. But we had to help finish on the road. Our parents, you know, they cut the trees and they put, you know.
They planted the seeds.
You know, but now we have to, you know, we already pavemented the road. Now our kids just got to drive it. If they put the effort, they should be able to become a lot more than we have accomplished.
Oh, yes. And I think that they got a good start with you guys. No, I would
That's
love to
correct.
Have you guys on my daddy, you know. Anyways, I mean, it just sounds like you guys are great parents and you guys are installing your children with good habits and good discipline to prepare them for the future.
I'm a grandfather, too, by the way.
Can you believe that?
I'm a grandfather.
This guy's a grandfather.
Oh, no.
Yeah, he's a grandfather.
See, yours has young kids. I have older kids. I started it young because I wanted it in young.
Yeah.
So you see my kid next to me, you think he's my little brother, but... I have a 20, almost 26-year-old son.
Wow.
A 20-year-old son who's in college.
That's
my
amazing.
Son works in the car industry. He's a salesman. And my youngest daughter, who goes to school, she's a junior. She's 17.
Oh, wow. So the next question I have regarding your career or business, what inspired you to get into the hairstylist business? You know, a question for both of you guys.
I'll start first.
Yes, please, tell us, share.
It's funny because the way it happened, it was by accident. It was totally, it was a funny story. I'm gonna.
Please tell us.
It's I come home in the afternoon. I don't know exactly what time it was. It could have been anywhere from 4 to 5. And I go through the house, all the way to the back of the house. And I find this guy. And my older brother, that's between the two of us, Alvarez, and one of our friends, Raul, and they're cutting each other's hair.
Oh, look at that.
But the funny thing is that this guy that I got right next to me here, he had the worst haircut. Like, they actually chopped off a lot of his hair, made, like, lines and
holes.
They were
experimenting
with him.
They were killing him.
Oh,
and
wow.
Then, but they were supposed to cut each other's hair among themselves. But
is that a challenge? Like, I could see that
it became
a challenge,
but, and then those two other guys, my other brother, Alvarez and Raul, they're goofy people. They laugh at anything. They just, one of them, my brother, is very evilish. Like, you know, he likes to do stuff like, you know, maldad. He loves that stuff. And then Raul would like laugh at everything. So they were cutting each other's hair, and they had this pair of scissors that, you know, those the paper cutting kind.
It was the clothing one, the big clothing one that you use to cut.
The what? I know exactly which one you're talking about.
Oh, okay.
That's not used to cut hair.
No, I thought it was the one that you use like with the orange.
No,
with the orange end.
It was a black one you used to cut.
Well, I don't remember that part, to
be
honest.
But it was not a cut in
here. It wasn't. So I'm like, what the hell are you guys doing? You know, I look at them, and then I look at this guy, poor thing. He had so many lines and holes inside his hair.
I can only imagine.
And then, you know, Raul just starts laughing, and my older brother was like, oh, we just cut each other's hair. I'm like, oh, my God, you guys are doing a bad job. And then I'm looking at them, I'm like, I think I can fix that.
I cut Raul's hair really good.
Yeah, he was doing a good job.
I cut Raul's hair.
But the
you
other
guys
two.
You never cut hair before in your life.
No.
And this was, wow. Okay, so maybe you guys, you know, they say that in you know, Latinos, they say, la mano ya está para cortar, ya está nacida.
Yeah, but I'll tell you, I'll come to that. So I convinced them that I will fix their hair because I thought I could do better than them. And the reason why is because there was a guy around our house that he passed away. I never got to tell him. I always keep, you know, I regret that I never got to tell him that he actually inspired me, because he used to He used to just walk around, you know, the neighborhood, and he would have like a pair of scissors and a pair of like a comb and a piece of cloth in his pockets, back pockets. He used to cut the roosters, you know, the roosters that they used to fight.
Really?
Yeah, he used to cut those. And then after that, usually people were paying good money for that. And while he was doing that, somebody would come up and say, hey, can you cut my hair? And so he would do it. And I would just watch him do it. And for some reason, I got some sort of attraction to that. I was like, why? Hold on. This guy is like, wow, the way he moves his hand. Mm-hmm. And I'll be watching. So he's moving around the guy, and I'm moving around him, watching him do it. But I didn't know why I was doing that. It just caught my attention. So when I got to cut this guy hair, I already had seen him so many times. And I was like, I can cut your hair. So I started cutting his hair. I fixed all the haircuts. But the one that I couldn't really fix the best was his. Addison's hair was the worst.
They really messed me up.
They messed him up.
They were laughing because they said I used to look like Dr. Soap. I used to be a cartoons, and his hairline was like a helmet. Like, you know, like the helmet they put on. That's how they did my line. It was terrible.
They killed him. So
wow.
I told them, I was like, look, I can't fix your hair anymore. I can't get any better than that. But if you give me a few weeks, I'll fix it for you.
I became his guinea pig.
So he started, he was my model for like, yeah. So I gave him like 2 weeks, and then I looked and I was like, no, we got to wait a couple of more weeks because I need more hair to come out. So I did that. And then as I learned, as people started coming over the house for me to give them haircuts, people that family from here used to fly over there for me to cut their hair. Like they wouldn't cut their hair here knowing that I cut hair over there. So I started getting good at it. And the guy that used to cut my hair, when I went to cut my hair with him, he was like, hey, what's going on? I like, all the guys that live around your neighborhood, they stopped coming. And I'm like, really? He's like, yeah, like, I don't know, like 10 of them or more, they're not coming anymore. I was like, is there somebody cutting hair around where you live? And I was like, yeah, that would be me. So I'm stealing your clients. So when I came to the United States, I already knew how to cut. And then my dad, since he was living here, we stayed behind. And I started cutting. My mom used to tell people, oh, my son cut hair, blah, blah, blah,
word
from work. So
word
of mouth.
Our friend from school.
Yeah, our friend from school. So I used to take him to my house in the basement with one little bulb and one machine.
Oh,
okay.
Wow.
That a friend of mine gave me. That was my first machine ever. My friend Eddie Paulino, his brother was married to a girl. They used to live here, and they used to travel back and forth. Mm-hmm. And she was a hairstylist. So when they came over the DR, and he was like, look, I'm going to get you this machine. He went into his brother's bedroom and brought me the machine and showed me. He's like, this is going to be yours.
Oh, that's so
and I was
cool.
Like, no way, man. I was
that
so excited. I couldn't wait for the day for them to leave because that's all I can think of. I want that machine. So
yeah.
He went and asked the girl, his sister-in-law, and she said, yeah, I'll give it to you guys when we leave. So that was my first machine ever. I brought that machine with me to the United States.
You
I don't know what
it?
I did with it. I don't know what happened. Like, we moved, I guess. It got lost.
That
in
would
the,
be a nice relic to have.
Exactly. Yeah, totally. So then my father wouldn't let me cut his hair. He's like, no, you're not going to cut my hair. You're a mere barber, he told me. You don't know how to cut with the scissors because I only used to use the machine. So I said, okay. So when I first got my first job cutting hair professionally, I still not so good at that. You know, I kind of stay away from cutting with the scissors. And I started looking at the people that was working right next to me. Like, there was a girl and a guy. And I asked them, how do you do this? And how do you do that? So I was watching them, and that's how I learned. I picked it up. And then from there, I went to school. I got a little bit more kind of interested
and
in
serious
it.
About it.
Serious about it. And then when I started cutting with scissors, I told my dad, now I can cut with scissors. And he's like, oh, I'll give you a chance. So I actually cut his hair. And he said, oh, you didn't do so bad. And I was like, no, I'm good. And from now on, I don't know who's going to cut your hair because I'm not going to cut your hair.
Yeah.
You said that I'm not good. Mm-hmm. So it was just like an inside joke I tried to do, but my dad was very strict. I wouldn't say that for real, you know? And then he said, what do you think you get this from? And I'm like, I don't know. I just picked it up. And he said, no, I don't know if you know, but in my family side of the family,
oh, look.
I have like cousins and uncles that's all they do. You get that from me.
He said it's a credit. It's
yeah, and then and my one of my oldest brother actually used to cut his own hair in front of me. I was like, how the hell do you do that?
Wow.
You know, so it's in the family. And then, you know, when this guy started, he just picked it up right away. I taught him a few things, but, you know, it's like in like you said, it's a trait
it's
that
in,
we have.
It's in your genes.
It's in our genes, yeah.
And
so
you know, for us girls, we'll know when they cut your hair and it grows right away. Like, oh, she's got the good hand for it. You
yeah,
know,
she, right.
You know, that's the
I got
that's
the good
how
hands.
You know. Yeah, my hair looks really bad right now, but it's the holidays.
For me, it was easier because I was already kind of seeing yours in the business. I used to cut people when they used to come in the house and they wouldn't find him. I said, I'm the one who cut yours hair. If you want, I can cut you. And that's how I started cutting people's hair, telling them that
so
I was the one.
So you can say he motivated you.
Yeah, pretty much. He
oh,
motivated
wow.
me to get in
I
the
like
business.
That.
And then, you know, like we probably mentioned earlier that once we both started cutting, our dream was to have one salon and be able to work, you know, with each other. And then he opened up his business. I got an opportunity and I opened my own business. And then we bought into a third business. We bought it together and then we bought the fourth business. And then I bought the fifth business and he got the sixth business. So we had multiple salons at one point.
This concludes part one of two of our interview with Edison and Yudis of the world-famous Salon 22.
This podcast is brought to you in part by Lawrence Prospera and is recorded in the multimedia room at the Sisu Center. Nuria Rivera is our host and Paul Thompson, our engineer and director, with assistance provided by young adults at the Sisu Center. Technical support provided by Tony Schumann. Our producer is Paul Heithaus. Executive producers are Jay Bartosik, Ralph Guerrero, and the Lawrence Prospera Board of Directors. Thanks to the generous support of the City of Lawrence, the Commonwealth of Massachusetts Executive Office of Health and Human Services, and the Massachusetts Department of Elementary and Secondary Education. Thank you to the New Balance Foundation, the Filene's Foundation, the United Way, the Nordson Foundation, and the Essex County Community Foundation. And a big thank you and shout out to the Maximus Foundation. Without their support, this podcast would not be possible. And lastly, a very special thing.